and welcome to Counsel for the State. I'm Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin. Counsel for the State is a podcast produced by my office. Our goal in each episode is to share information with Idaho residents, journalists, and anyone with an interest in state government. Our aim is to increase transparency, further understanding of the office's role in government, and discuss timely legal topics. I hope you enjoy this installment and consider exploring past episodes as well. With that, here is the Office of the Attorney General, Public Information Officer, and Counsel for the State host, Scott Graff.
Hello and welcome to Counsel for the State. Today we start Season 2 of the podcast and do so by talking about consumer protection issues related to the COVID-19 pandemic. Before we do, we would like to say thank you to everyone who joined us throughout our first season of the podcast. Our first 14 episodes of Season 1 are all archived at the AG's website, ag.idaho.gov, as well as on iTunes and Spotify. Joining me today is the Attorney General's Consumer Protection Division Chief, Brett DeLange. Brett and his staff are at the office's forefront of the office's response to scams and claims of price gouging stemming from the virus. Brett, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
And back for Season 2 of Counsel for the State is Brian Kane. Brian is a Deputy Attorney General in the office. He's also the Assistant Chief Deputy in the AG's office. Brian, welcome back.
Thanks. Glad to have Season 1 in the books and off to a roaring start in Season 2.
So before we get into specifics of why we're gathering today to talk about scams and price gouging, we should note that the three of us are recording in three separate locations. I use the word gathering loosely in this instance. We do this, of course, to be safe and follow proper social distancing guidelines, and because much of the office's work is being done remotely right now. Brian, before we get into the consumer topics associated with coronavirus, will you take a moment to just discuss kind of what the office looks like right now and how the office is a one big unit is handling its business?
Sure, Scott. So I'm actually in the office right now, and I can tell you that it is a little bit of a ghost town, which it probably should be based on the fact that we're observing the governor's order and social distancing properly. Right now, there are very few folks actually in offices doing the work. Almost everyone within our office is working from home. I do know that there are probably a few folks that come into the office to either get some work that they can't access at home, or I'm aware of a few folks that actually go into the office because they've found that they can be a little bit more productive at times within the office than they can be at home. But even outside of our office, like just walking around the Capitol building, there isn't any of the traffic that you're used to. It's very empty, very few folks in our co-constitutional officer offices as well within legislative services. So it's a much different feel to the Capitol building and to our office all in general. And I can tell you, we've been conducting business remotely. We've gotten familiar with Zoom. We've had our most recent kind of larger office meetings through Zoom. And the platform, you know, notwithstanding all of the things that we've heard online about security, has been pretty stable and pretty useful. And so we are getting the work done. The state remains represented, and we continue to legally represent all of the folks that we historically have. And I can tell you that I'm still getting and responding to legislative legal requests.
Brett, how about you? Your office is probably the most public-facing division in our office because of its interaction with constituents on consumer-related issues. How has the pandemic changed the way that you and your staff do your essential work?
Quite dramatically, our workload has increased because we've received a number of new complaints. At the same time, as Brian reported, very, very few of us are working in the office. Many of the staff are working by remote, so it creates some different challenges and some different needs, but we're addressing them.
So you mentioned your dramatic increase in workload that really began on March the 13th. That's the day that Governor Little declared a state of emergency because of the coronavirus. A few hours after that declaration, our office then issued a news release announcing that the emergency declaration triggered Idaho's price gouging law. That is a law that has been in the news and put under the microscope to some degree the last several weeks. What is that law, Brett, and what does it cover?
That law has its genesis in 9/11. After 9/11, the legislature, I think it was essentially the next legislative session, enacted Idaho's price gouging law, which essentially says in times of a declared emergency, either by the governor or by the president of the United States, a retailer is prohibited from selling certain identified products at what's called a, quote, excessive or exorbitant amount. The products that are covered are fuel, pharmaceuticals, food, and water. So if you have a declaration of emergency like we had in this case with Governor Little issuing his proclamation on March 13th, the law's provisions kick into place. And it's for the duration of the emergency. And at that point in time, retailers are simply not allowed to charge an excessive or an exorbitant amount. The law states that what an excessive and exorbitant amount is determined to some degree about the difference in margin between the wholesale price of the product and the price that's being offered at retail. And you can look before and after the declaration of emergency, and you can just look at the costs. It also says it's appropriate to look if the business has any enhanced costs that need to be factored in due to the emergency.
So you're hearing from constituents on a pretty regular basis. What kind of complaints have you and your staff received along the lines of price gouging?
Well, we've received quite a few complaints, and they cover both items that are covered by our statute, but they also cover items that are not. We've received a number of complaints from consumers. Probably the most frequent of them are that a retailer is now charging according to the consumer, a price gouging amount, if you will, for toilet paper or hand sanitizer, for example. And some of the prices that have been reported to us certainly sound like that. I mean, extremely high prices for a roll of toilet paper or some hand sanitizer. Those products, though, are not covered by the price gouging statute. They're just not a food or pharmaceutical, so that the statute's scope doesn't apply. We've also received complaints about food and particularly fuel, gasoline, that are covered by the statute.
So, Brett, you've talked about the scope of the statute. Do you have any reason for why perhaps that scope is so narrow? Do you have any insights?
Well, I think back when the legislature first considered this price gouging statute, there was a lot of argument and debate about, first of all, whether the state should do this at all, the legislature should do it at all, and if so, what should it do it with regards? There was a significant concern that we just didn't want a blanket, we're going to cover everything sort of price gouging statute. And so, as the legislation made its way through, I think ultimately they said, in times of an emergency, what are the fundamental things that we just shouldn't see price gouging over? And then we'll let the market take care of everything else. And it certainly was never unanimous. There was opposition to the bill, both in the House and the Senate, but it coalesced around, well, core things are food, water, medicine, and fuel. And so it was, the old, it's an ugly process to watch legislation, sort of like sausage making, but that's how it ended up. Some states have much broader price gouging statutes than Idaho does. Some states don't have one, though, and Idaho ended up where it is with covering those four core products.
Your description there actually reminds me of the old movie, The Demolition Man, which has Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes and Sandra Bullock. And if you remember, their society doesn't touch But they also don't have toilet paper. They use the three shells, which I don't think anybody's ever quite figured out. But your discussion of fundamental or kind of necessities to survive kind of brought that up. And I wonder if that movie wasn't maybe a little bit prescient as to what we're dealing with now.
You know, the legislation passed in 02. I think it's 02. I hope my memory's not fading too badly.
So 02 means it probably would have been a result of September 11th sorts of legislation.
September 11th was the genesis, because after September 11th we had gasoline stations charging $6 a gallon, and that concerned enough legislators that, you know, they wanted to do something about it. So after it was passed, Governor Otter issued a declaration after Hurricane Katrina, not that Idaho was affected, if you will, but because of the ability then to enable the state to send people to help in the disaster. So we've really not had an emergency declaration that actually did affect the state until now. And so there aren't court cases. There is no precedent for this statute. It's, you know, we're just applying the wording of the statute as enacted by the legislature.
And I think that, you know, for folks listening out there, if you read through Idaho's disaster and emergency statutes, you'll see when you read through them that they really do focus on things like natural disasters and attacks as opposed to things like an epidemic that we're confronting now. And so one of the things to keep in mind is whether there'll be lessons learned from what we're going through right now that the legislature will then revisit and say, hey, wait a minute, we've got to fine tune some of these statutes because they match up well for a September 11th or a Hurricane Katrina, but we're a little bit squishier when it comes to how do we address a quarantine or epidemic sort of situation.
I'm sure there'll be a number of lessons that we can all learn from it. So, Scott, you know, as we get complaints, for example, that someone's selling toilet paper for $20 a roll, that the statute doesn't prohibit that, even though we have a declaration, because it doesn't fit. We're still writing the business and letting them know about the complaint, you know, perhaps inviting them to consider the price in this emergency. But, you know, it's nothing more than an informative letter or an FYI, if you will, that, well, we've received this complaint, the law doesn't require you to change your conduct, but, you know, perhaps you'd like to reconsider. So it's more like informative letters that go out in those instances. When the complaint does cover something that is covered by the statute, we are following up with the complaint further to evaluate it under the statute.
Can you go into that process just a little bit, what that process looks like when the complaint touches on one of the four listed areas in the law?
Well, while virtually all of us are outside, we do have a couple people that are handling complaints within the office. And, you know, we every complaint that we ever get in the consumer division, we evaluate it, we enter it into our database. And here, where if it's a product that's covered, we evaluate and then pursue it. Perhaps we will pursue more formally in terms of investigative processes. Sometimes we can handle that less formally, if you will, in determining, you know, what is happening. But, you know, if the Attorney General has reason to believe that the statute is being violated, he has a number of investigative tools that he can use to determine if, in fact, the law has been violated, and if so, then what to do about it.
This is a civil process. It is not a criminal process. While these investigations are going on, I know that you're going to be you have to be guarded in how much you can say, but can you give us an idea of how deep into the process you may be with some of the subjects of those initial complaints that happened in mid-March or so?
Some of them we can neither confirm nor deny, Scott.
Understood.
There are a few where, you know, the letters have written back, either the business has has provided additional information to explain the pricing that's satisfactory to us, or they've, you know, in a position of saying, well, you know, we can adjust appropriately. And our goal here is conforming to the law and complying. And so, you know, when a business fesses up and says, yeah, we probably shouldn't have charged that much, but here's what we'll do, that you know, that can address the problem as well. Some of them may be more serious or more momentous, if you will, and we're not in a position to discuss further at this time those sorts of things, you know, but we have ongoing things that we're looking into.
Fair enough. It's been almost 4 weeks since the governor issued the emergency declaration that triggered the price gouging law. Are you hearing from consumers at the same rate that you were initially? Is it increasing? Has it tapered off? Can you give us kind of a feel for the number of people that you're hearing from across the state?
The complaints continue to come in. I think they're coming in a number lower than in the very, very beginning. But they really haven't, they continue to come in.
And for consumers who are interested in filing a complaint with the Office of the Attorney General, you can do so online. The AG's website is ag.idaho.gov. Just look for the Consumer Protection Division button, and you'll be able to find that contact information for either phoning in a complaint or filling out an online form. Brett, before we shift gears away from price gouging, is there anything more that you would like to say on that particular subject before we start talking about COVID-19-related scams?
I don't think so. I think it's important. The governor's emergency declaration is coming up. I think, if I understand the emergency statutes, he's authorized to do 30-day, but he can renew them. And so we'll be obviously having to stay close and see if the governor determines to extend the emergency. Because if so, then the price gouging statute continues to stay in effect.
So let's go ahead and switch gears to scams now. We talk on a regular basis in our office about scams in terms of consumer protection issues. Perhaps there's no more prevalent issue that we hear from folks on than scams. But it's a little bit different now given the pandemic, the situation related to the pandemic that we all find ourselves in. These are new scams focusing on multiple areas of consumer vulnerability. This is all in an attempt to try and capitalize on consumer fears resulting from the pandemic. Brett, are you hearing from Idahoans who are being contacted by scammers looking to capitalize on the pandemic?
We are. Some of them are homegrown, if you will, and some of them are, you know, more global coming in. Some of them are ones that we are anticipating that will be coming in too. And so here we're trying very hard, where we can to educate our citizens to protect themselves and to help their families protect themselves. This is going to be one where parents are going to need to warn their parents and warn their children, and children are going to need to warn their parents and siblings so that people aren't taken in.
The office issued a press release on March the 30th that was one of our most involved press releases because it was elaborate in that it listed many different types of scams. That is a resource that folks can find on the AG's website, again, ag.idaho.gov. For that piece of information, click on the newsroom link and you'll find all of our press releases listed there. Again, this is a March 30th press release. Brett, let's talk about some of the kind of above the fold scams that either we're hearing from or that counterparts in other AG's offices across the country are hearing. What are the main scams that you feel like either you're hearing about or you're going to hear about?
Well, I'll start with the ones that we've heard that have come within Idaho. And one of them that we've seen in a couple parts of the state is the claim that, you know, we can come fumigate your home and kill off the virus, the COVID-19 virus. There's nothing to substantiate that claim. And we're contacting businesses who are advertising that because you can't make an unsubstantiated claim. Another one is that certain elements, one of them is silver can help you avoid the virus, ingesting silver. There's nothing that substantiates that claim that we are aware of. And so that has been that's a concern to us and one that we are following up on as well. More globally, they're related perhaps more to the Congress's recent enactment of a stimulus package and an emergency relief package that includes checks that are going to be coming to most adult Idahoans, and emails and text messages and phone calls that are now coming saying this is the IRS or this is, you know, FEMA or someone, we're processing your check, but we need your Social Security number or we need your account number to deposit that check into. That's a fraud, and that's just coming from criminals because the federal government is not going to contact you by email or text or telephone to obtain that sort of information. But people thinking they need to, you know, to get that check are being solicited for this very confidential information, which will this just be turned around to become a victim of identity theft or to lose money out of their bank accounts.
And if I could just kind of reinforce that with the IRS, if you go to irs.gov/coronavirus, they have a really comprehensive page with regard to how these stimulus checks are going to go out, the fact that it's still in process, the fact that, you know, part of this is built on whatever the information is that you've submitted. If you haven't filed your 2019 taxes yet, then within your 2018 taxes. And so really, folks should be directing all of their attention to the IRS website specifically, because as we've said in previous podcasts, the IRS does not text and they don't send emails. It's one of those things that the very best advice we can offer folks is go to the IRS itself, irs.gov.
And I think this is one, Scott, where it's going to be needed to be said in different ways and at different times. And this is one where it'll be helpful for children to tell their parents and their grandpas and grandmas and vice versa and their siblings. No one wants to, you know, miss out on that $1,200 check, but and the criminal knows that. And so they're going to try to see if they can, you know, squeeze some information, a bank account info or Social Security number out of someone, because then they can do a lot of havoc and harm. So we're going to need, you know, we've been saying this in a variety of different ways, but it's going to take a community effort making sure everyone knows this so they can just delete that email, hang up on that phone, delete that text. You know, and talking about, Brian mentioned that, you know, that the IRS has a really good site. It's also true that, that is true. And We have now on the Attorney General's website a dedicated link to COVID-19 that if someone clicks on, they'll be able to see, for example, our tip sheet on avoiding these scams. This might be a good thing for a family to download and share with their family in a family council or a family meeting of some sort, or to disseminate it to people in their neighborhoods. This is one where we're going to have to work together to protect ourselves.
Yeah. And one of the things, Brett, we talk about every single time we revisit this issue with scams is that they work because these scammers have sort of perfected their craft in making people feel a sense of urgency and or along with a sense of fear. And the pandemic presents a golden opportunity, especially with that second part regarding fear. So even more so than usual, folks have to keep their guard up.
Yes. I think the other thing that they prey upon is there's a very asymmetric relationship in these sort of things. The criminal knows a lot more about you than you know about them. And they know that you might be not so certain whether the IRS has your info or not. You know, and they want to prey upon that. And so they do an effective job. That's why they're doing it. They're making money off of people. They are literally stealing money and identities from people as a result. And we need to all slow down. We don't have to tell the IRS today anything. And we can, if something like that happens and we want to ask a trusted friend, we can do that and then get to the bottom of it. You know, the IRS, for example, has said, if you have had given them your bank account info in the last several years, they already have it. You know, they already know it as part of your tax return if you got a tax, refund. But if you're not certain, you can contact the IRS directly. You do not need to wait for that email. In fact, don't. Delete those emails, delete those texts, hang up on those phone calls.
Yeah, and if I could just kind of reinforce Brett's point, one of the best ways to know that something is a scam is for the government to announce that it's going to do a stimulus program, and then that same day or same next day or same week, all of a sudden folks have a way for you to get your stimulus checks. The government does not work that quickly. Sure, aspirationally, we'd love to have a government that was that quick and responsive, but the reality is it just doesn't. And so those scams for folks that are just thinking, through these sorts of things are really obvious. And it should, and folks can kind of remind themselves, hey, if I'm getting this email at this point in time, it's a scam. It's guaranteed to be a scam because government just doesn't work that quickly.
And the other thing I think, Scott, I think we want to emphasize too is they prey upon our fears. And right now, this virus is, it's a cause of fear. It certainly seems like it has a more morbidity rate higher than the common flu. It seems like it perhaps is more infectious than the common flu. And, it seems like it has some significant impacts, particularly on certain age demographics of our population. And these are all things of great concern. When someone out there says, well, I've got a cure for it, we want to think our ships come in and this is going to be the thing that saves us all. And we need to avoid wanting that and believing in that and putting aside our common sense. If a cure is to be found or a vaccine, it's going to be announced by the federal government or the state government, for example. It's not going to be announced by some flyer on a poster down by the corner street. And so we need to be patient. Cures take a long time. Vaccines take a long time. So in the meantime, we need to just do the things that we do know will protect us while we wait for further knowledge and further abilities to address the pandemic.
And one thing I would bring up, the second paragraph of our press release from March the 30th reads, common scams may include cyber scams, telephone and text messaging scams, counterfeit product offers, bogus door-to-door tests and virus-related products, and phony charity donation requests. That's a long list, which means, Brett, that basically these scammers are trying to prey on us wherever we spend our time, whether it's on the phone, whether it's online, whether it's in our home with the door-to-door, wherever we exist as people and as consumers. They're trying to meet us there and scam us there. Is that accurate to say?
I think it is. And I'm glad you raised the charitable because we haven't directly touched on that yet. Idahoans are pretty generous folk and they want to help their neighbors. We've just witnessed that over and over again in a variety of ways. And so when things like these disasters arise, it's not unusual for new charity organizations to come online or solicitations to be received that sound like they're going to help first responders or our healthcare professionals or people who've lost work. All of them noble causes, but it's I don't know if it's a cliche. You can't judge a book by its cover. Well, you can't judge a charity by its purpose. They all sound like they're going to do the best thing you've ever heard. But you need to know your charity. Just like probably most of our listeners, they spend some time shopping and researching before they buy a new car, perhaps a new appliance. You have to do the same with your charities. You have to know who they are, and that you have confidence that the money you send them is going to be spent for the purposes. More often than not, when we get called on the phone by someone claiming to want to be raising money for a certain charitable cause, you're being called by a professional fundraiser. 80% of your donation is going to go in that fundraiser's pocket, and maybe 20, 15%, if at all, will go toward that charitable purpose. And, you know, that's unfortunate, because in Idaho, we've got a lot of charities that do miraculous things on shoestring budgets. And if we just sent them our full donation, a lot more good can be done than having 80, 90% of our donation siphoned off by the professional fundraiser. So the message here is not don't give, but it's know who you're giving to. And then focus your efforts that way, because charities do wonderful work, but they don't do a whole lot of wonderful work if the money never makes it there. We need to know who we're donating, and that does take some effort on our part to know who's that charitable organization, what they're actually doing with the donations, and just like we'd want to know about our school, you know, whether we want to send our kids to a school, you know, a certain school, or want to buy a certain car or a certain appliance.
And there is a website we have in our press release, consumerresources.org, a federal resource. They have a charities portion where folks can basically do that investigation online, verify that the charity they've been contacted by is on the up and up. One other point we mentioned, when giving, always do so by credit card or other secure payment processor. Of course, never give by gift card, wire transfer, or any other electronic payment processor, essentially, where once you make the payment, there's no recourse to get it back, because it's basically untraceable. So that is information. Brett, you mentioned the COVID-19 tab on our website. We have on that tab all of the office Corona-related information that the office has generated, including tips from the FTC that we compiled. This is that tip sheet on how to avoid and report coronavirus scams. We've got frequently asked questions about Idaho's stay-at-home order, frequently asked question list on the price gouging law, and then the March 30th press release as well from the Attorney General announcing that folks need to be on the lookout for scams. Again, the Attorney General's website is ag.idaho.gov. You'll find the COVID-19 button. It's a big blue button right under the Attorney General's website. And we can't stress this enough. Have that conversation. If you're listening to the podcast, you're visiting the AG's website, you are probably very well armed to be on the lookout for these scams. It's the folks in the community who aren't necessarily perhaps as plugged in, as well read, as informed. And those are the folks we're asking you to have a conversation with, to make sure they are just as prepared as you are, so they can be on guard and not get taken by these people who are really nefarious and doing some poor work, trying to prey on our fears. Brett, Brian, that pretty much was going to wrap up my portion of my question list. Is there anything that we have not discussed that we should talk about? And if not, how about some parting words of advice for our listeners before we go?
Well, this is Brett. I am amazed at how many good Idahoans there are out there doing good things. And sometimes we talk about scams and price gouging and like it's, you know, the world's falling apart. Sure, there's some instances where that's happening, and the Attorney General's going to deal with them. But we also have the ability to witness and observe the many good things that are happening around the state, and the efforts to get us all through this, you know, this pandemic. We're witnessing and experiencing something I'm not aware that many, if any, of us have ever experienced before. So we want our listeners to know that, you know, together we're gonna get through this. We welcome complaints. We welcome questions. We do have a person handling the phones if they want to talk. We have a staff employee to talk to, with those persons. And you know, it's we say often, Scott, that the Attorney General is going to win his battles in the courtroom, but we will win the war on this pandemic and on fraud by us helping each other understand our rights, understand the facts, and making good decisions.
Brian, any parting advice?
Yeah, I would. The advice that I would offer is kind of the same advice that we kind of always offer, and that is make sure that you know what you're doing with your information and with your money. If you're getting a request for financial information from someone that doesn't seem right, it probably isn't right. If you're getting a donation request from somebody you're unfamiliar with and it just doesn't seem like somebody you've heard of before, do some research. You don't have to make a decision in that moment. Time is your friend in these sorts of situations, and don't let someone else create an artificial deadline that forces you into a bad decision. As you've heard, you know, our office, even though we're kind of in this state of social distancing and isolation, our work is actually going up within this time. And it's because folks are out there trying to make the most of this situation, which may not be in your best interest. So stay alert and stay wary and keep your distance.
Amen.
Very good. And contact information for the Office of the Attorney General's Consumer Protection Division online, ag.idaho.gov. Telephone number 1-800-432-3545 or 208-334-2424. And with that, we will conclude this episode of Counsel for the State. Each episode is available through outlets like iTunes and Spotify. If you know someone who would like to listen to today's podcast, but they're not a podcast subscriber, that's okay. We have another option as well. Each episode is also available through the AG's website. Just look for the word podcast on the AG's homepage, and you'll be able to find this in all other episodes as well. Thank you very much for joining us. Until next time, stay safe.